Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Kamidogu podcast. I am Christopher Veljanovsky, and joining me in the virtual podcasting booth once again is the man, the myth, the legend, Toasty.
Toasty!
Now, we'll get to this episode's guest in just a moment, but before we do, I have a favour to ask of you. If you like what you hear, please hit follow or subscribe wherever you're listening right now. Also, make sure you rate and review on your platform of choice, as it helps us reach more folks such as yourselves. The bigger the audience we can muster, the more quality content we can provide to you in the future. Finally, don't forget that although this is a podcast, Kamidogu started off as a website many, many years ago, and we have a huge community of fans that we'd love you to become a part of. So, please follow our Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram pages, and of course, subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is just shy of 41,000 subscribers. Anyway, enough from me. Toasty, take it away.
Welcome! Kamidogu is back at it again. Me and Chris have been very eager for today's event. Joined with us today is a world-class martial arts expert with a ninth degree black belt in Red Dragon Karate. To us diehard Mortal Kombat fans, he is the extraordinary, the one and only Scorpion from the 1995 MK movie, Chris Casamassa. He later reprised this imposing character in 1998's Mortal Kombat Conquest, a television show that was number one on the charts for its time. It is with great pleasure to have him here on the show today. We have lots of questions in store, and I think I can hear somebody now saying, "Get over here!" So, I guess we'll get straight to it. And here we are, joined with the real Scorpion himself. To start off, I just wanted to say thank you so much for taking the time to join us today, Chris. We're both big fans.
Hey, man. Happy to be here.
How was your time recently at Fanboy Expo in Vegas?
Oh, it was actually really good. A bunch of fans came out, so we had a great time. My wrist is a little sore from signing autographs, but hey, I could have worse jobs.
For sure. So, I understand you were actually picked as Scorpion basically by accident on the 95 film. Could you tell our audiences a bit more about that? And also, did they automatically offer you the role of Scorpion for Conquest, or did you have to audition again?
All right. Well, you got two good questions there, and here we go. So, yes, I technically got the Scorpion role in the 95 film by accident. I had done some other movies leading up to that. When I was younger, it was one of a goal of mine was I wanted to be in action films and martial arts films. Like Bruce Lee was an early hero of mine. I'm like, if he can do it, I can do it. And so I had done some smaller roles and smaller parts, and my agent called and say, "Hey, they're auditioning background fighters for this movie based on a video game." That's all I knew. Didn't know what video game it was, but they need background fighters. They need people with martial arts experience. So I go, okay, great. I go to the studio where they're having the auditions, and there's probably 50, 60 guys there, super talented. A lot of them I knew from the local competition circuit and things like that. So they were bringing in real martial artists, and they were having us, basically what they said was do your best stuff. Well, at that time, fortunately, I was one of the top competitors in the world. And because I was on the pro tour, the competition tour, and they had it set up like kind of like a tournament. They had a big performance area, and they had three people sitting in chairs. I think they were casting and producers. So to me, it looked just like a martial arts tournament. I was in my element. But there was also some super talented people there. And I was like, I want to do something that stands out. You know, this is a bigger budget film. I've never worked on anything like this. So, you know, and then when they brought us all in, they said, "Listen, we just want to let you know all the roles are cast. We need background fighting." And, you know, at that time, though, we knew it was for Mortal Kombat, which is cool. I was a huge fan of the game. And all the roles are filled. We just need background fighters for a few different scenes. I'm like, great. But I still wanted to be in it because I wanted to be part of a major Hollywood production. Yeah. So I'm doing my thing. And the three guys that were sitting in chairs, like judges at a tournament, at that time, I'm like, you know what? I'm pretty sure I can clear these guys. So I was doing my routine, doing some martial arts, and I ran right at them and did a jumping sidekick over the top of them. And I remember like in slow motion, them going like this, looking up, boom, and they watched me land on the other side of them because they were sitting in chairs. So they're only maybe 3 feet high. And then I did some moves and I did a dive roll back over them and I finished. So I get home that night, my phone rings, and they go, hey, we want you to come back tomorrow. And I'm like, wow, okay. It's hard to get in for a background fighter. I go in the second time, and they had us do some weapon stuff. Now there's only maybe 10, 11 guys there that time. So I did my weapon stuff, go home. Phone rings. We want you to come back tomorrow. I'm like, oh my gosh, it is so hard to get in a major Hollywood film. Like, I was just going background. Imagine like what the casting would be. So we come back the third time, and now there's only three of us. There's me and two other guys. And we're just standing there, and they go, you're not going to do anything today. We're just going to stand. They had a movie camera there, and they essentially had a group of people around behind the movie camera. And they were basically just filming our bodies. They were just filming our bodies. And a guy walked over who, at the time, I didn't know who it was because I didn't know anybody on the production or anything. I found out later it was the director of the movie. But this guy walks up, and he goes, hey, would you guys mind taking off your shirt? And now this is where being young and being a little bit of a smart ass gets me into trouble, because I just looked at him and I go, well, listen, they'll forget me in the movie. I'll go back to your trailer. You see, you laughed, and both of you guys laughed, which was the reaction I was going for. But he was stone faced like that. And I go, oh, my, like, no reaction. And I go, whatever this is, like, I am totally not getting it. I have no idea. And so, you know, we take off our shirts. I'm in great shape. And they're filming us. And then the whole group of people, five, six people, go into like football huddle. And then the guy director walks back over, and he shakes my hand, and he goes, welcome to Mortal Kombat. You're going to be Scorpion.
Wow.
So I was like, okay. And then it didn't hit me until I went to walk out the door. I put my hand on the doorknob and turned the door, and this big ear to ear grin just went. I was like the Joker is what I look like. Actually,
naturally.
I was so hard. So I got home and I called my mom. I'm like, mom, guess what? I'm going to be Scorpion. My mom goes, that's great, honey. What's a scorpion? She had no idea, like in the video game or anything. So that's actually how I ended up doing it. And, you know, Larry Kasdanoff, the producer, took a big chance on me, essentially an unknown at that time. And, you know, it paid off. It paid off. Yeah. And then for your other question about Conquest, they actually made me audition. I had to audition for Conquest. And it was my joke with Larry. I'm like, really? Like what I did on film wasn't good enough for you? He's like, well, we have to do it for the kid. Because it was TV, because the network people had to see me and the whole thing. So,
right.
And he goes, you're not gonna have your mask on. You get to be you, and you get to be this character, and we'll evolve it into Scorpion. He goes, they got to just make sure that you can act and do all that and blah, blah, blah. So fortunately, I only needed one audition with that. And then he called me. He goes, yeah, you got it. Don't worry about it.
Brilliant.
Nice.
Yeah.
So it seems like the mask that you wore in Conquest was a lot bulkier than the 95 film. However, towards the end of the show, its design changed quite a bit. So did you have any influence on this change? And which of the masks did you actually prefer?
I preferred my original movie mask, which is what I was lobbying for during the first four or five episodes. I'm like, this thing is like, it was like a football.
Yeah.
Come on. And like, no. And then we were having battles because I would be pulling it down. Like they wanted it up here. So like, it was like this high at one point. And oh, I'm like, God. You can't even see my eyes. So I would pull it down and I'd have it like at the very, very tip of my nose, like right here. And then the costume person would come back and pull it up, and then we'd turn around and walk away, and I'd pull it back down. And then the director would go, action. And I would do my stuff. I'm like, why are you pulling your mask down? I'm like, I can't even see. Like as soon as I move, it goes up over my eyes. So then they changed it. You know, they went back to the warehouse and got my original one, and then it was much easier.
Oh, perfect. You've said before that you have a ton of stories from your time working on Mortal Kombat Conquest. This is my absolute favorite show in existence. Could you tell us a few stories from this show or a couple fond memories you have?
Well, the whole thing was a fond memory. It was a great time. I got to live in Orlando, Florida, you know, while we were doing that show, and which is a great part of the U.S. It's the home of Disney World. So, you know, there's a lot of good times going on there. But the on-set stuff, I mean, it was great. Listen, we had, you know, J.J. Perry, who just a good friend of mine. He was the best man at my wedding, actually.
Sub-Zero.
He just directed. He played Sub-Zero. But we were really good friends. We met on another show on WMAC Masters. And now he just finished directing a movie with Jamie Foxx. Like he's going to blow up. JJ's going to blow up as a director. And that movie comes out, I think, August 12th on Netflix. It's going to be awesome.
Sweet.
So I'm giving JJ a shameless plug for his for his movie. But yeah, with him, Daniel Bernhardt, who I had not previously met, but got to meet, and what a great guy, and just another super talented guy. And that's why, you know, I talk about Larry Kasdanoff all the time. I give him a lot of credit because here's the, and most people don't know this, but when Mortal Kombat came out, it had very low expectations, box office and industry wide, because previously to that, two other video game franchises came out with movies and they tanked, right? Street Fighter and Double Dragon, and even Mario Brothers, all three of those came out before Mortal Kombat, but they all did horrible at the box office and they had very low expectations. But Larry very smartly goes, I want real martial artists. I want the best people I can get for the roles that I can get. And I want it to be as authentic to the game as possible. Now, for me, when I got Scorpion, like my two favorite characters, and I told you in the beginning, I was a huge fan of the game. My two favorite characters were Raiden and Scorpion in that order. Nowadays, it's Scorpion and then Raiden. But I love those two characters. So when I got that part, like I really wanted to be as authentic to the game at that time that I could be when I was doing the moves and techniques and putting the fight scenes together. So, you know, they have the ability to do that. And then to get to do it again in the TV show where we had even more flexibility and more time to shoot these episodes, you know, we're doing episode of putting these fight scenes together. It just made a really fun experience.
Yeah.
So speaking of the many episodes that you were in, of all the fight scenes that you performed, which was your favorite, and were there any that were a little more difficult than others to pull off?
Well, listen, the Scorpion Sub-Zero one was the one that I was most excited about because the fan stuff at that time was you've got to fight Sub-Zero. And even from the movie, like we wanted to see those guys fight. So when we started shooting the TV show, that we had that discussion early on, and that's why they planted that episode about the halfway through the first season, because they really wanted people to build up to it and be like, here it comes. And then JJ was Sub-Zero. So it was awesome because we got to work. I mean, we spent a good month putting those fight scenes together and working, you know, the script. And so it made that flow well. And the other cool part of that was Scorpion had a girlfriend.
Yeah, Perone.
Many people didn't know. Yeah, that's right. I'm like, see, I still get to be the ladies' man, even though I'm dead.
Exactly. during your scenes in the show, did you, in fact, have any creative input towards your character? For example, Jeffrey Meek told us that he was allowed to have some free roam. He was even involved in the choreography, appearance, and even dialogue.
Yeah, 100%. Because, and listen, and Larry will tell you this, he's like, I hired Chris because of what he can do. So I'm going to let him do what he can do. That's why I brought him on board. But our fight coordinator and stunt coordinator, Pat Johnson, who is a legend in the industry, he did all the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle films, all the Karate Kid films, Batman. He's done so much, and he was the stunt fight coordinator on the show. But his method is great because he knows that he's got talent. So he's like, you guys put the fight scene together, bring it to me. He looks at it because he knows the camera angles and all that. And then he's like, all right, I want you to change this. And then, you know, of course, the script dictates who's going to win, who's going to lose, how it's going to play out. So he kind of takes the talent that he has, lets them do their thing, and then molds it so it works on camera and on screen. And it's great because you feel good because you really feel part of the creative process. I mean, imagine if I had a certain style that I did, but the stunt coordinator had a completely different style and he wanted me to do that. Well, it's not going to come across as well because that's not my strength. So that's what makes Pat really great with the way he choreographs the fight scenes and the stunts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you keep in touch? We've seen that you keep in touch with a lot of the original actors from the games, but do you keep in touch with any of the cast from the movie or the TV show?
I do. Like I said, JJ was the best man at my wedding, so I definitely keep in touch with him. But Keith Cook, who played Reptile, another super talented martial artist, a good friend of mine. His martial arts studio is, you know, maybe 30 minutes away from mine. So, and we both share a trainer, a fight trainer in common. So him and Lyndon Ashby, who's like super busy, but he and I chat once in a while. He was great too. And this is the other thing, you know, Lyndon, I don't think gets enough credit because for 90% of what you see in that movie, that's Lyndon. He really wanted it to be authentic. And he actually not only took a crash course prior to filming, but after we were done, when we wrapped, he was my student for almost 2 years. Like he trained with me 2-3 times a week. He was so into it and we got to be really good friends. So it was really cool.
That's incredible. You've mentioned before, Chris, that during your time being the stunt double for George Clooney's Batman in Batman Robin, that they unfortunately cut out tons of amazing fight scene footage that left you disappointed. Were there any particular scenes from the Conquest show or the 95 film that didn't pull through that you had filmed?
No, especially in the Conquest series, like they left everything in. It was great. They didn't take anything out. So that was really, that's why I said I had such a blast on that show, and it would be great to bring something like that back. But no, we had a good time in the film though. And I don't know if you guys know this story, but the fight scene between Lyndon and I, between Johnny Cage and Scorpion, almost didn't happen. We were in Thailand filming the exterior shots that you see, the first part where Scorpion and Johnny Cage meet in that forest. That's a rubber tree plantation. But what happened, as most Hollywood films happen with, and that is scheduling. They run over schedule and over time because the way the shots are set up or the weather, like it would rain and it'd be sunny. So it came down to, I was there for 3 weeks. We rehearsed every single day. On the last day, my flight was scheduled to leave the next day. They finally go, we're going to film today. Well, of course, the way a film production goes, you don't get through. All we got through in that whole first part was the part where all the way through where Lyndon comes and runs at me. And he jumps before you see the screen fade away. But what you don't know is in the original cut of that film, when he ran at me and jumped, he hit me with a kick and I was supposedly dead. And they go, that's all we can do. It's all we have time for. And I talked to the director and I talked to Larry, the producer. And I go, listen, Lynn and I have been working on this for weeks. We have an epic fight scene that is going to rock. We have to be able to shoot it. And like, yeah, we just ran out of time. Everyone's going home tomorrow. It'll be fine. And I go, okay. So here's why I'm so happy to do interviews like this and to go to these Comic Cons, because of the fans. So when movies come out, before they come out, they go to test screenings. Well, when they did the test screening for Mortal Kombat and it came to that part, Larry Kasdanoff called me on the phone and he goes, Chris, when Lyndon kicks you and you die, the people in the test screening audience stood up, threw their popcorn at the screen and walked out. And they said, there's no way that Johnny Cage would ever beat Scorpion like that. That's the loyalty to the game and to the characters and stuff. He goes, Chris, it didn't happen once. It happened at three separate test screenings with three different audiences. And I was on the phone with him and I go, I told you. And so now we're back in LA. So now they have to, that set that you see where Lyndon and I fight, that's a real set. They built that. This was way before like all the computer animation that you see today and all that. So in an airport hangar in Santa Monica, they built an entire 20,000 square foot Scorpion's lair, which was awesome. Like, I wish I still had some of that. That would be cool. And we were really fighting up on a 20-foot high platform that is no wider than a kitchen table. We were up there. We were really doing it. And we were in there for 3 weeks filming that fight scene. But that only happened because of the fans, which is why I'm so appreciative of all the fans of Mortal Kombat. Like, all the time, like, people go, aren't you tired of doing it? I'm like, no. Man, I love it. It happened, and that movie crushed when it came out the box office. I was talking about that earlier. We were the first video game franchise to not only be successful at the box office, but we were number one for 6 weeks in a row. Plus, we had the number one soundtrack. When the TV show came out, it was also number one in its time slot. And it's the only video game that I know of that ever became a Broadway show. Like, we performed the live action tour at Madison Square Garden in New York. And that's all because of the fans and the loyalty of the people of the game and the characters.
I mean, it's hard to imagine the movie without that scene. It's so iconic now.
Oh,
I'm so glad you pushed for it. So that's fantastic. With Mortal Kombat being number one across so many facets, how did you react when Conquest was unexpectedly canceled after one season?
Yeah, listen, we were all really bummed out about that. We had a whole second season. Like, they had it written. It was going to be even better than the first season. But listen, that's the politics that happens behind the scenes of stuff that I'm not really privy to. But I knew there was a conflict between the TV rights, the movie rights, the game rights, like the powers that are way above my pay grade were all kind of battling over who got what piece of the pie. So because they couldn't agree, it went away, which was unfortunate. But
did you
stuff like that happens all the time?
Yeah. Did you hear of anything of Scorpion for season two?
Of course.
Yeah. Did you?
Am I going to tell you about it? No.
No.
Just in case, I can.
That's fair enough.
But I was going to have I think I was in the first 13 episodes, I think I was in four or five of them, but I was going to be in almost all of them in the second season.
You didn't really marry your girlfriend or anything?
No. Well, no. Sub-Zero kills her, right? So.
Yeah.
Well, if you're both dead, then, you know.
Yeah. Well, the good thing about me is I get to keep coming back to life.
Yeah.
I'm an undead evil specter, so.
True.
So when you spoke of the 95 film and how the fight scene originally ended with Johnny Cage doing the shadow kick, was this original version at least rather graphic? How exactly did that scene play out?
No, it wasn't. Listen, when that movie came out, it was PG. You know, they were trying to reach a very wide audience. Like the new one that just came out had an R rating, right? They really wanted to go with the blood and guts from the game and stuff, which was, you know, a cool concept behind that. But we were trying to reach a very mainstream audience. And the kids, listen, look, we're all grown up now, but we were all kids back then. So we wanted all the kids to go see this Mortal Kombat movie. And listen, what didn't they have a congressional hearings about Mortal Kombat and the blood and the violence in the game. So we were trying to keep it as PC as possible at that time. So we didn't run into any conflict from the government.
Okay.
So you mentioned in other interviews previously that you've done some motion capture work for the animated series of Scorpion. Tell us a bit more about this experience and what exactly it was.
Well, mocap's kind of cool, especially with the technology that they have, because you get to see yourself in real time. Like they have these big screens in the building. So I'm in the mocap suit and I do these moves and you see the character move with you, which is really cool. It gets to be distracting. Sometimes they have to turn it off because you're watching yourself up on the wall while you're trying to do this stuff. It's like, look at the guy you're fighting. So yeah, that was a very early version of the web series, the animated web series that they did.
Okay.
And then we did a movie called I did mocap for another movie that Larry produced called Food Fight, which was another awesome concept and just didn't take off for whatever reason. But Food Fight is about all the items in a grocery store at night. They all come to life and they have their own kind of ecosystem and they have their own little battles and stuff. So it was a fun little project to be involved with.
Now, I recognize that Scorpion was originally supposed to play a much bigger role in Annihilation before you ultimately ended up choosing the Batman gig. You stated there were some massive fights planned for this character. Would you be open to telling us some of the original pitches for the fight scenes?
Well, what we were going to do is carry over what we did in for the TV show, and there was going to be a much bigger Sub-Zero versus Scorpion kind of segue that was going to happen in there. And, you know, I think a battle with Shao Kahn, if I can remember correctly, like there was some stuff in there. I was going to have, I think he said four different fights in the film. But listen here, you know, it's important to always be you. Unless you can be Batman, then you should be Batman. So, but I, you know, what happened again, it's the classic Hollywood story, right? I had the schedule set. Batman was supposed to shoot from June to August. Mortal Kombat 2 was supposed to shoot from August through October. So I'm like, perfect. I got my next 6 months dialed in.
Yeah.
I made the commitment to Batman. I told Larry, I go, look, I'm going to be done 3 months. When you're starting, we'll be ready to go. He goes, perfect. Don't worry about it. But they pushed the start date for Batman a month and then 2 months. Now I already have a contract and I can't get out of it. So, you know, listen, Larry's been great to me over the years. And so when it came down to it, I go, listen, I'm not going to be able to be in this. And he goes, no problem. You know, we'll double you out and blah, blah, blah. But the cool thing that Larry did, of course, was he took all my fights out because I want you to do the fights. I'm like, all right, well, it's not going to be me. So, you know, and unfortunately that movie didn't do, I think it still came out. It was number one the first weekend, but you know, there's a lot of, the biggest thing I think with the second Mortal Kombat film was they had too many characters and you couldn't pay attention to all the characters in there, the story. And then listen, James Remar is a great actor, but I just don't think he was made for Raiden the way Chris Lambert was. You know what I mean? It's an unfortunate series of events. And there you have it. My two cents on that issue.
There we go.
I believe you've mentioned before that you've played and enjoyed games even as recently as Mortal Kombat 11, and you know, you play with your kids. So do you typically pick Scorpion and Raiden when you play, or do you
go with other? 100%.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Scorpion before Raiden, right?
That's right. That's right. 100%. But yeah, listen, I was at the Mortal Kombat launch party when they had it here in LA for the game, which was great, and there was a bunch of people dressed up in cosplay as Scorpion. It was so awesome because I was having such a great time. But they didn't know who I was, right? I didn't have my outfit on. So I'd walk up to him like, hey, you're Scorpion, huh? And they're like, yeah, yeah. I go, listen, that's such a great outfit. I go, really reminds me of these characters in the original game. And they're like, oh yeah, it's really cool. But one girl who's dressed up as a female scorpion, she actually recognized me. She goes, I know who you are. So it was great. So I had a lot of fun at the MK11 launch party. The other part of it is, like, my son now is so good. Like, when he was younger, I could crush him at the video games. Like, I can barely get one or two hits in on him now. And he just dominates me. The kids today are so good at this gaming. Like, I can't move my fingers that fast. But
I think you said your son wants to be an esports commentator or something.
I don't know if he's going to be a commentator or a player. Like, he's really good. He's really good at those. I'm trying to get him to enter some tournaments, and I want to test him out against, other good players across the country. So we'll see.
Yeah. You were meant to reprise the role of your famous combatant for the third Mortal Kombat film, and you claim Scorpion was, quote, very, very angry, unquote. I understand Hurricane Katrina also set you guys back, amongst other things. What were your thoughts when you found out they officially canceled this film? Do you think there's still a chance all these years later that they could pull something from that story and bring it to life?
There's a chance they can pull something from that story and bring it to life, 100%. That film, though, will probably never get made, just because, listen, Midway declared bankruptcy. Warner Brothers bought the rights. They had a battle with Threshold Entertainment. It was a whole lawsuit versus this, lawsuit versus that. So that part of Mortal Kombat is never probably going to happen ever again. Mm. What we're trying to do now is create a Mortal Kombat multiverse, in much the way Marvel is doing with Doctor Strange and Spider-Man and all that. And a lot of the fans are really taking to it, and they're starting to lobby Warner Brothers, because if that happens, then I'll be back.
Yeah. But
if they continue it the way it is currently, like, unfortunately, I won't be part of that franchise. As much as I would love to, like, I just go and give people coffee on the set. Like, I just still like to be part of it. I'm a fan of the franchise. But as Scorpion, I don't know that I'll do that unless they do a multiverse, which would be awesome. I think that it would go over really well. And they could bring in elements from the game as well as the previous movie. So there's a lot of material there. If Warner Brothers is listening, do the multiverse.
Yeah.
That's the hashtag. When I talk to people now, I'm like, do the hashtag, bring back OG Scorp.
Well, heck, you said on your Instagram that it was, I think you said it was happening. Did you not?
Yeah, I'm trying to stoke that fire. It's happening.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Red Dragon Karate and how far things have come, along with details of your book, Bullyproof Fitness.
Well, listen, Red Dragon Karate was started by my dad in 1965. So this is our 57th year in business. We've got 15 locations here in Southern California.
Wow.
We've taught hundreds of thousands of people over the years on the best ways that they can protect themselves, defend themselves, become more confident, more active, more physically fit, and have greater self-esteem. Listen, when it comes to martial arts, it's my opinion that if every person on the planet just studied martial arts for 1 year, our planet would be a much better place. Just because of what you learn, the discipline, the self-respect, the self-awareness. And, you know, I could be on a soapbox for an hour here, but especially with girls, right, and women. Like, there's so many bad dudes out in the world today. You know, according to the FBI here in the United States, one out of every three females is attacked or sexually assaulted in their life.
Wow.
Do you know what that stat is for guys? Guys, it's 1 in 100. So, like, when I do any interview and people ask me about it, I'm like, listen, if you have a girl, it is in your best interest to get them in the martial arts. Like, it's not even an option. Like, the same way you would do swimming, right? Your kids have to learn how to swim, because if they ever get thrown in the water, they will drown if they don't. Well, your kids should learn martial arts, because at some point in their life, they're going to be attacked or confronted or made to be tried to be made afraid of something. And if they don't have the tools and the skill set to know how to protect themselves mentally and physically, like, they're going to drown in life as well. And we don't want that to happen. And that's kind of why I'm out doing it. And that leads into the book, right? So I wrote two number one best-selling books, Bullyproof Fitness and Bullyproof Life, and they're designed for kids and their parents to help them if they're getting bullied, right? The books are available on Amazon. You can get them all around the world. But my goal, part of my mission and passion and purpose nowadays, is I'm trying to help 1 million kids go through our Bullyproof program so that they become Bullyproof certified and they know how to stand up for themselves. And it's not the old, just punch the bully in the face, like 1950s thing. That actually doesn't work. And it's the thing that we tell them immediately, don't ever do that. Unless you've training like me, where I've trained my entire life, like, don't do that. There are so many other tools and resources and things you can do. If somebody comes up to you, or they confront you, or they're saying something to you that you don't like, the verbal self-defense that you learn in our Bullyproof program is just as valuable as the physical self-defense that they learn. And that's why I wrote the books, because it's going to be difficult for me to get to a million people, but my books can go out everywhere and they can do it. And I even have a free app, like in the App Store and the Google, or in the iTunes and Google Play Store. It's absolutely free. I'm not selling anybody anything, but it's a resource for kids. They can watch videos and do trainings with me. There are PDF downloads that parents can look at. So like, if my kid's being bullied, what do I say to them? What do I do? There's resources for school teachers and administrators that are like, okay, this is happening in my school. I don't know how to deal with it. And then I go around to public schools all over the world and I do this demonstration. You know, I've taught, or at this point, 64,000 kids have gone through our Bullyproof certified program. But I'm trying to get to a million. So when we do interviews and I do the plug, I'm just letting people know and make them aware about it. And there, I'll get off my soapbox on that one for now.
Oh, very nice. And and I find, you know, folks like yourself incredibly inspirational, because I think everyone goes through bullying at some point in their lives. And I certainly did early on. And in the sort of around the year 2000, I started Taekwondo for that reason. And I earned a black belt. And then I ended up leaving because, you know, life gets busy. And only recently, 20 years later, I've actually taken up karate now. So, you know, people like you just know that you do inspire loads of people when you go out there and do interviews and put yourself out there. So I thank you for that.
Yeah.
Right on, man. Well, I'm happy to hear that. That's awesome. And welcome back to the arts.
Thank you.
Okay, Chris. So we're now going to jump into our last segment of the show, and it is called
Final Round.
So what we're going to do during this final round is we're going to ask you some quick questions, try to get to know you a little more. So the first question being, what are some of your secret talents?
I'm actually a really good snowboarder and skimboarder.
Oh, wow. Look at that. What would you say was your most unusual fan encounter?
I got asked to sign a breast.
Oh,
oh, no way. Did you do it, Chris?
Listen, I'm here for the fans. I'm a giver. And if that's what they want, I'm your guy.
Love it. Love it. Here's an interesting one. If you were granted 3 wishes, what would they be?
Can I wish for 3 more wishes? Well, listen, I'm going to go with the standard. World peace would be great. An end to hunger and famine and homelessness across the world would be awesome. And my third wish would be Mortal Kombat Multiverse. Let's go.
Come on. It's got to happen.
Since I've covered the planet, I'm going to do one for me.
Who's your favorite Star Wars character?
Ooh. You know, I'm going to go. That's a good one. I mean, the easy one's Obi-Wan. But I like Ewan McGregor's Obi-Wan. But I'm going to tell you. Going to tell you, and this might shock people, and it's not Jar Jar Binks, I can tell you that.
Okay.
I kind of liked Rey from the last series.
Okay.
I thought she did a really good job.
Daisy Ridley was great.
Ridley.
Is it true that you're trying to get into The Mandalorian? Is this true?
It is true, yes.
Wow.
Yes. I've had a couple friends work on it, so I'm trying to work more. I love that show.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah.
Chris.
And Moon Knight's pretty good. Have you guys been watching Moon Knight?
Yeah.
Have you been watching the new Moon Knight series? Yeah. That's pretty good, too.
And that's written by Jeremy Slater, who's actually writing the next Mortal Kombat movie.
Oh, my God. I got to have my agent call him.
Chris, what was your very first job?
Making pizzas at a local pizza place.
Oh, nice.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I lasted almost 2 weeks there.
Almost 2 weeks.
I got fired for putting too much cheese on the pizzas.
Oh, really?
Why? Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, I'm Italian, so I'm making the pizzas. I'm like, hey, I'm throwing it. And the guy who owns a restaurant's like, 4 ounces, only 4 ounces. I'm like, nobody wants 4 ounces of pizza on their cheese. You know, I'm 17. Like, what do I know about business? And he's like, I need 4. And so I like, okay, well, you can't work here anymore.
Well, all the nonnas of the world, they don't measure. They just, you know, pinch of this, a bit of that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
What is the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Well, my dad's given me a ton of great advice over the years. The best piece of advice for the movie and TV industry that I was ever given was given to me very, very early in my career by Pat Johnson. And he goes, Chris, I want to tell you something. They can take a great actor and make them look like an amazing martial artist, but they can't take an amazing martial artist and make him look like a great actor. So take acting lessons. So when he gave me that advice, I took it to heart, and of course I did it and took acting lessons and classes for years and years, and it really helped out. It really paid off. And it was, you know, listen, my martial arts ability is one of those things that set me apart from other people, but having the ability to act and do that as well also got me in some doors, and then my talent just kicked the rest of the door open. So it was great, great advice that served me well over the years.
Very nice. What is your guilty pleasure?
Peanut butter.
Oh,
nice. And finally, what is the funniest thing that has ever happened to you? This seems to stump a lot of folks.
Funniest. But yeah, that's going to stump me, because the funniest thing that's ever happened to me. You got me on that one, guys.
Okay.
I got nothing. Okay. I got nothing. My bad.
No worries. No worries. Well, it has been an honor to have you on the show, Chris. It's been a lot of fun, and we're excited to see where your career will take you from here. For the people listening to our feature today, where can fans find you on social media, and is there anything at all that you'd like to give a plug?
Yeah, pick up any one of my books on Amazon, of course, Bulletproof Life or Bulletproof Fitness. Download the free Bulletproof app. I'm the easiest guy on social media to find, and I'm on all the platforms, Snapchat, okay. Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok. All you got to do is know how to spell my name and you will find me. Because there are some fake accounts. There's some fan accounts and some fake Chris Castmaster accounts. But just find the right spelling of my name and you will find me anywhere, and you can reach out to me at any time.
Perfect. Good to know. All right. Well, we hope to speak to you again in a bit, and we wish you all the best.
Yeah, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And it's a wrap. Much has been discovered about this very well-known Mortal Kombat character, often labeled as the icon of the franchise. A lot of people around the community absolutely praise Chris for his splendid performance, and it would be one of the greatest things imaginable if Chris were to reprise Scorpion in a future project. We all have our fingers crossed, and we'll be keeping an eye out. Lots of content coming up, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll definitely be seeing you soon enough. In the meantime, have fun, stay safe, and
stay flawless.